Week 8 of 9, I think I'm going to do one more week of this series, Learn From Me, where we look at the things that Jesus did and look at what we can draw for them from those things. So today we're going to look at something that's a very exciting passage as we read through the Word. We read this one, and this one gets used a lot. It gets used in a lot of faith illustrations, and we're going to look at it from a little different angle today, because remember, we're looking at what did Jesus do? What can we look at from what he did and draw from that? So if you want to turn to Matthew chapter 14, this is the famous passage where Jesus walks out into the water and Peter steps out onto the water, right? Jesus calls him to him. Peter walks on the water too for just a moment, but we talk about Jesus walking on water a lot. And so this is Matthew 14. I'm going to read that account, verse 22 to 33. It says, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up on a mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. And when his disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him, saying, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said, "Come." And when Peter had come out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid, and he began to sink. He cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why do you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." One of these amazing stories that we see recorded in the Bible about Jesus. And here we see he defies the laws of this world and he walks on water. An amazing thing. How many of you have ever tried to do that? Like, seriously, me and Jason, Robbie, just guys. Bud, have you tried to walk on water? Okay. Not even like a puddle? Oh, okay, that explains it. Well, most guys, I guess, have tried walking on water. I mean, it's like, hey, I got faith, right? Why can't I do this? I mean, you walk off the deck, try to walk on the pool water, you fall in, it's fine, you're going to get wet anyway. But he defies these physical laws of this world and does the impossible, walks on water. An amazing story, an amazing picture. And just before this story is actually what I preached last week, which was feeding the 5,000. So he feeds the 5,000, and this story here is what follows that up. So if you remember last week, this was a long day, okay? He started out by preaching. He started out by saying he was the Son of God and healing, doing some miracles, and he ends up going across the sea. He goes up this mountain. He preaches more. He has the disciples look for food. He multiplies the food. They gather the food. All this stuff happens, okay? It's a big, long, whole day event. And then this right here is what happens after that. I mean, that would have been a fun day, right? I mean, if you would have been there for the miracle and then now maybe you get to see this, okay? This is an amazing day. But he says immediately in verse 22, immediately after this miracle of feeding the 5,000, this big, long day, immediately, say immediately, okay, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. Immediately. Have you ever had people over to your house and they didn't want to leave? They may have ever been in that boat. They're like, these people are not going to leave, right? Like, I'm tired. I'm ready to go to bed. They're not going to leave. Have you ever had that and maybe they weren't ready to go, right? You're like, you're ready for them to go, and they're kind of like, this is just getting started, and you're kind of like, I'm falling asleep. We've had that happen before, years ago, before we started going to Florida after Christmas to see Christy's family. We did a New Year's Eve party a couple of times, There was a couple of those where I was literally falling asleep on my couch while people were still there, because I'm like, I thought like once the ball dropped, you guys were going to leave, right? I mean, I don't stay up that late, and I'm kind of like, I wanted to be like, immediately, I'm going to send you guys out. I'm going to cast the multitudes out. But here Jesus had this long day, okay? And you guys have been there. You've had a long day. You're ready to relax. You've had a good group of people over. The food was good. But you know what? Maybe the food was too good, and the people didn't want to leave, right? I mean, think about these people. Jesus just fed 5,000 with 2 fish and 5 loaves. And it was probably good food. And these people, they don't want to leave. Is it okay to send them away? I mean, I would say so. Like, I don't, the whole thing, I don't care where you go, but you can't stay here. Like, I'm going to bed. Get out. Right? I think it's okay to send people away after a good time together. But see, Jesus was used to this. Everywhere that he went, the multitudes didn't want to leave. Every time he gathered people together, and no matter what he did, if he performed miracles, they didn't want to leave. If he preached about the kingdom, they didn't want to leave. It didn't matter what he was doing. If he drew a crowd of people, they never wanted to leave. And we see the disciples also never want to leave, right? They always want to be by his side, except for that time when he was in the garden and he wanted them to stay up and pray. Then they wanted to sleep. But, you know, that's because, again, he kind of went away. I think if he would have stayed, they might not have slept, okay? But he makes them all leave, all of them, okay? He made the disciples get into the boat and get in the boat and go to the other side of the sea. Now, I don't know which side, but remember, they just came from the other side. They came from the other side whenever he declared that he was the Son of God, and he was kind of chased out, went to the mountain. Now they're going to the other side again. Maybe they're going a different direction. We don't know that for sure. But he makes the disciples go, and then he tells the masses, right, it's time to leave. You know, I imagine him on the mountaintop, and he's like, the show's over. There's nothing more to see here. You guys need to go home and get some rest. Like, get out of here. It's done. And so everyone leaves. Verse 23 says, when he had sent away the multitudes, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. And now when evening came, he was alone there. He was alone there. This is the first thing that we can learn from Jesus today in this story right here. It's okay to send people away, right? It's okay to be like, you know what? Okay, that was fun, but it's time to go. It's time to go. It's especially okay to send people away when, you know what? I need to spend a little time in prayer. Right? I need some rest. I need to reload here. I need to relax. I need to get refreshed. And you guys are going to have to go. And so I look at this story and I see there's two phases here of sending people away. And I see him sending the disciples away, sending the 12 away. He made them get in the boat and go. I don't know if you caught that word when I read it, but he made them get in the boat and go. They clearly did not want to go. There may be various reasons why, but they didn't want to go. And so I look at the 12 like sending your family away, right? You guys know what this is like, especially if you still got a large family in your home. Sometimes you're like, kids, it's time for you to go to bed. But it's not my bedtime. I don't care. Go to your room, right? Get out of here. You got to send them away. Get out of here. Mom needs some alone time. Get out of here. Dad needs some alone time. It's time for you to go. Maybe you even need to tell your spouse, like, listen, I'm fine. I'm not mad at you. I just need you to go somewhere, right? Some of you have done that. Like, hey, here's, you know, why don't you go shoot some guns with one of your friends? Why don't you go to the mall? Why don't you go do this? Like, just get out of the house for a little while. It'll be great for you and for me. You just got to send them away because you want to spend some time with God. Sometimes maybe if you're a kid, you need to do that with parents, right? Like, you know what? I could just use some time alone just for a little bit. I need to get refreshed. I need some space. But then sending the masses away is like sending everyone else out, okay? Now, this would apply to people who are not as close to you, right? Because the 12 were the people that were closest to him. They were like the people that were his family. So he got rid of them, but then he also had to tell the masses to go. Now, some of you may not have masses of friends, so that may not make a lot of sense, but what about something like Facebook? Facebook is the masses, okay? Because you may only have a couple of friends that come over and hang out or you go to lunch with or whatever, but then you have all these friends, right? I have friends on Facebook that I don't know who they are. And I have to go and look, you know, because I don't usually deny a request because, you know, I post a lot of things about Jesus and I want people to see it. So there's friends that we have, these masses of friends that we're not that close with, that sometimes we've got to send those things away. Facebook friends, sending people out the door, but also shutting off that door of distraction, right? Why? So we can get refreshed, recharged, spend some time with God. You might have to do what Jesus did, and we see here that he was already up the mountain whenever he did this miracle of breaking the bread and feeding the 5,000, but it said that after he sent them away, he went up the mountain. So he went a little higher. He went to a place that was a little more private than where he was already at, and you might have to do that. You might have to go wherever it is that you can get away and have a little more privacy and a little more time where you're not disturbed by anyone else. And some of you know how refreshing that time is, how rejuvenating that time is, because you need it, right? So Jesus sends the 12 off so he can get alone and pray, and look what happens to them. Verse 24 says, but the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now, if you remember, out of these 12, there's at least four of them that were skilled, experienced fishermen, probably on this very sea, okay? They knew their way around the sea on a boat. They knew what to do, they knew where to go, they knew how to do it, but now we see this boat is being tossed by the waves, for the wind is contrary. This sounds fun, doesn't it? How many of you are like up for a good boat ride at night in the rough sea? What do you think about when you hear the word toss? Okay? I think about something gentle, okay? Like this. Now toss it back. Yeah, that was a little stronger than a toss, but toss it back. See, nice and soft, a little bit softer, okay? This is kind of what we picture when we're looking at toss. I throw somebody with a notebook and a pen in their hand because you never know when something's going to get tossed at you. All right, that's a toss. It's gentle. I had to give that a little bit. That's still a toss, but I had to give it a little more. But it's still pretty gentle, right? Now, Jason's a softball pitcher. Toss it back. See, overhand, but it's still a toss. Now, that's kind of what I think of when I see the word toss. Now think about being in this boat that's being tossed by the waves. I mean, that doesn't seem so bad, right? It's just a little, you know, it's a little swaying, you know, just kind of moving around a little bit. This right here, what the scripture is trying to describe, is nothing like the way we just tossed that ball around. There's nothing gentle about it. There's nothing kind of nice and playful and like calm and relaxing. That is nothing like what it's trying to describe when it uses the word toss here. This word toss, when you study it out in the Greek, let me tell you what it means. It means to torture. Not very gentle, right? To torture, to torment, and to harass. Okay, so the sea, the waves of the sea were tormenting, torturing, and harassing this boat. Okay, it's not gentle, it's not calm, it's not relaxing, and it's probably pretty scary, pretty violent, a pretty rough situation. And when you think about being in a boat, what you like when you're in the boat is you like a good tailwind, right? Some wind that comes behind you and it aids you into where you're going. It gives you a little extra speed. It kind of helps you out, and it's actually a little bit fun. But this word toss is more like a headwind. It's more like this wind that is coming directly against you, straight toward you, blowing against you, making it harder to gain ground. And remember how they got to where they were going? They're rowing. They're rowing, and they're rowing, and the wind is pushing, and it's pushing. And they're probably not getting very far, very fast, without much effort. And I don't know how many of you have been on a long canoe trip where you're doing all the rowing and the other person is not, and you want to smack them with your oar. right? Anybody ever been there? You're like, dude, start rowing. Like, times I'm not doing all the work anymore. And so imagine these guys in a much bigger boat. There's 12 of them, but it's probably like, dude, Matthew, get to rowing, man. This wind, we're not getting past this wind. Get, put your work in. Quit being such a wimp. James, take the oar from Matthew. He doesn't know how to do it. So, I mean, imagine these guys trying to make their way against this tossing of the wind. It's violent. It's rough. It's difficult. And that's why it says the wind was contrary. Right? So we see some of the words and it's like, that's silly wording. Why would it say it's contrary? It's contrary because it's opposing them. It's against them. It's hostile toward them. In John chapter 6, his account of this, which is much shorter, it says the sea arose because a great wind was blowing. Right? It does not sound gentle. It does not sound like a tossing, but it was violent. It was very rough. And I can't help but wonder if maybe this is why Jesus had to make them get in the boat. Skilled fishermen, they're like, dude, the storm's coming. We are not getting in that boat. And he's like, oh, yes, you are. You're getting in the boat. Like, I need some time to pray. You guys are getting in the boat and you're going to the other side of the sea. I can't help but wonder if, is that why he had to make them get in the boat? Was it not even as much that they didn't want to leave his side as that, I don't want to leave your side, but I definitely don't want to go over there right now because the storm is rolling through. Can you remember a time in your life and think about a time where you feel like God was calling you to go somewhere and do something and you're like, I ain't going to do that, right? The storm is coming. That sounds frightening. That sounds like it's going to be hard work. That sounds like it's going to be a little bit scary. Can't I just stay over here with you in this nice, calm, restful place? Can't I just pray with you and do nothing else? And you find yourself in a position like that, and where we can quickly go is, why is this happening to me? Why did you let this happen to me? Why did you do this to me? Right? We can go down this road with the Lord, and we end up questioning. And these disciples, I kind of wonder if they're thinking the same thing. Why did Jesus send us out here? He knew this storm was coming. He's not stupid. But he sent us out here. But what these men did, what we see, and I don't know how much arm twisting it took, but we see that they obeyed, right? We see that they went where he told them. They got in the boat, and this is what they get. Torture, right? Torture for being obedient. How often in life does a great storm suddenly develop when we're trying to do something out of faith or obedience? Happens all the time. It happens all the time. 2 Corinthians 5:7 says, for we walk by faith and not by sight. We walk by faith and not by sight. See, these men here, they were looking for Jesus. I'm pulling this from the John chapter 6 version again, but it said that they were looking for Jesus and they hadn't seen him yet. They hadn't seen him. And so he hadn't come to them. This storm pops up and John says that they rowed 3 to 4 miles. Okay, now if you remember last week, I estimated with my pen cap that it was about at least 4 miles across the sea. So maybe they were going a different direction, but they rowed against this hostile wind for 3 to 4 miles. Sounds pretty rough, doesn't it? But here's what happens. You develop faith that endures by going through storms. You develop faith that endures by going through storms. You know what? You don't have to go storm chasing because the storms will find you. Right? The storm will come. The storm goes where it's going to go. No matter where you go, it will come. It will find you. Hebrews 13 verse 5 and 6, it tells us, for he himself said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Why did he say that? So that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? Now that's pretty easy, but what about the sea? Right? Do you have any verses like that, Jesus, where you said, what can the sea do to me? Because I'm not really that afraid of men, but what about the sea? Last week in Bible study, we actually were talking about these ways that we're persecuted and these struggles, the way that we suffer for Christ and how that is supposed to ignite our passion for God. And we looked at Paul and what he'd been through. Does anybody remember how many times he was shipwrecked? Was it three or four? Shipwrecked. Okay, and it says that then he spent time out in the deep. So he was shipwrecked out here, like where these guys are at. Not like on the shore. He didn't run into a rock on the shore and break his boat. Like, he was shipwrecked in the middle of the sea in the deep. Okay, so he knows. He had been through this. We see there's times where Jesus uses storms in our lives to teach us to be calm and to have trust and confidence and reliance upon him, because these are places where our faith grows, right? It's ultimately a good thing, even though it doesn't seem like it in the moment. It's ultimately a good thing we're to take joy in. Even we saw where the disciples, where Peter and the apostles were taken into court and they were flogged and let go. It was like, okay, we'll let them go, right? They were convinced by Gamaliel to let them go. He's like, okay, well, I'll do that. But then they flogged them and then let them go. And we see that they left that scene and they had what? Joy. They might remember why they have joy. Anybody that was Bible study? Because they were counted worthy of suffering for Jesus' sake, for his name. Right? We're to even find joy in the fact that we're worthy to suffer for Jesus. But knowing that develops more of Christ in us, and the storms and difficulties, we know they do not compare, right, to the results of coming through on the other side and looking more like Jesus. Verse 25 in Matthew says that he, now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. The fourth watch of the night, Jesus goes out walking on the sea, and when the disciples see him, they're troubled, right? They're worried. They have fear. They're like, it's a ghost. And they cried out for fear. The fourth watch, this is anywhere between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. When did it say Jesus was alone? In the evening, right? When it started to get dark. Okay. He doesn't go out there on the sea until somewhere between 3 and 6 a.m. He waited to go out there. Well, first of all, he was praying, right? He said, he sent him out because he was going to pray. And so he let them try their way for a while. He let them row against the storm. He let them row and try to figure out in their own power how to get away from it, how to do whatever they needed to do. And they clearly continued this from some time. From getting dark until 3 to 6 a.m. We don't know if it was 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours, 9 hours, right? Is this all starting to kind of fall into perspective of how long they were possibly rowing against the storm out in the sea? These men have got to be tired. I mean, worn out, grouchy. Jesus has been praying. They've been rowing for hours, getting tossed around, right? Not gently, getting tossed around. And Jesus finally shows up. This would have been my attitude if I'm in the boat. Oh, now you're going to come, right? Like, grab an oar. Probably what I would have told him. Like, dude, you're up. We've been at it for hours. It's storming. They see him coming and they're troubled, right? They're troubled. They're distressed. They're anxious. They're restless. And what do they say? It's a ghost. They were half right, right? There's a man filled with the Holy Ghost. I mean, they were kind of along the same lines. They were kind of on the right track. It's a ghost. When you're in the midst of the storm, you know what? Sometimes it's hard to recognize Jesus as he enters the picture. Even as he enters the picture, because we're so stressed out, we're so worn down, maybe even a little confused, and when he shows up, listen, he often shows up in a way that we don't expect. He hadn't walked on water before that we're aware of, except for that cartoon. Anybody ever seen that cartoon where it's got the little toddler like standing on the water in the bathtub, and it's like the mom is supposedly Mary, and it's like, Jesus, get in now, right? Like, get in the water, like pointing at the water. It's pretty funny, but we never seen Jesus walk on water before. They'd never seen him walk on water before. They were not expecting him to walk miles, okay? we picture this, and we've probably even seen paintings or drawings where it's like they're from here to the wall in the boat, and Jesus is like 4 feet out in the water. They rowed 3 to 4 miles, and Jesus comes walking on the water, miles, in the midst of the storm. Here he comes in this way that they don't expect. And when he comes in a way that we don't expect, we often don't recognize him at first. But it's when we're weary of drawing from our own power, when we're weary and we're just tired of trying to do it our own way, trying to do whatever we've got to do to overcome, this is when we should most easily recognize Jesus in the midst of our trouble and draw from his power. But sometimes we just can't see past the storm. Anybody wear glasses and ever been outside when it's raining? It's terrible, right? You can't see. You can't see anything. It's like as soon as you wipe it off, they're back on again. Think about, you ever been driving a car when it's raining and your windshield wipers, like maybe they're getting a little old and all of a sudden that whole rubber piece just falls off, right? It starts flapping around and you're like, it's worse now than if I didn't have wipers. And how terrible it is, you can't see anything. It's miserable. Here, they couldn't see clearly. Why? Because they were filled with fear, right? They're filled with fear of what's happening to them in this boat. And then they're filled with fear because Jesus is there. And they're like, well, that can't be Jesus. That's something coming on the water. And the Jews in that day, they would believe that when someone died, that their spirit inhabited a part of land. And so they literally, it wasn't like, we don't know what that is, so we'll say it's a ghost. They literally thought he was a ghost because this is what they believed. Ghosts inhabit areas, and this must be the ghost of whatever is must have died here in the sea. And so here we see that they can't see. They're not seeing clearly. They're filled with fear, and they cried out. Say they cried out. Okay, here's what happens in verse 27. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid. Be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid. And here's the next thing we can learn from Jesus. When he hears one of his followers cry out, he responds immediately. See, they cried out in fear, and it said, immediately Jesus said, be of good cheer. It's me. It's me, guys. Don't be afraid. Be of good cheer. And some of you need to hear this today. If you cry out to Jesus in fear, he responds with no delay. With no delay. See, this is the kind of prayer that Jesus answers immediately, is help, I'm scared. It's that whole thing that I shared at the beginning about the having the faith like a child, just being humble and recognizing our need for him. He says, here I am. You don't have to be afraid anymore. And even if what you're afraid of is him because he came in an unexpected way, if that's what causes us to question or to doubt, he says to be of good cheer. And another way to say that is to have courage. Be of good courage. It's me. It's I am, right? It's God. You don't have to be afraid. There's one other time, there's actually a few other times, but this one I want to point out, another time that Jesus says to be of good cheer. It's in John chapter 16. It says, these things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. Why? I have overcome the world. I've overcome the world. Be of good cheer. Be of good cheer. You don't have to be afraid. You can have courage. You can have peace. You can have joy knowing that Jesus has overcome the world. Everything life can throw at you. Every storm, every trial, every fear-filled moment, cry out. And Jesus will immediately respond. And Peter cries out in chapter 14, verse 28, and he says, Lord, if it's you. Right? See, he's still not sure. He's like, if it's you, command me to come out to you on the water. And so Jesus said, come. And Peter, when he went out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind was boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." See, Peter reminds me, this is all I could think of when I kept trying to get away from this because it's not Christmas season, but I just couldn't shake it. Anybody like the movie Home Alone, right? Home Alone, where the kid gets left alone. Okay, Peter reminds me of Kevin McAllister, okay? Because Peter, I mean, think about what he's been through. It's like, hey, I'm scared. Hey, Lord, if it's you, call me out. Okay, I'm coming. This is great. This is Jesus. He gets scared again. And it made me think of Kevin, because there's this scene in Home Alone where he literally comes out from under his bed from hiding, okay? So he's scared, and he's kind of like, you know what? I'm going to be tough. He goes out the front door. Does anybody know what he says? I'm not afraid anymore, right? He yells, I'm not afraid anymore. But he doesn't just stop there. He says, I said, I'm not afraid anymore. He doesn't even stop there. He's like, did you hear me? I'm not afraid anymore. And then he looks up. And who's there but the old man from next door who his brothers told him that old man's like a serial killer, right? He uses that salt that he's sprinkling on the sidewalk to dispose of bodies. And so he sees that guy and he goes, ah, and takes off running back into the house. This is all I could think of as I'm reading this through it and I'm looking at Peter. And I'm like, Peter, like, you're like Kevin McAllister, okay? You're just like him. Peter was afraid. And he said, Lord, if it's you, call me to you. And Jesus, what does he say? Come. Okay, come. Come on, Peter. You got this. Let's go. Can I tell you today that this is always Jesus' response to this question? If we say, Lord, if it's you, then call me to come. When we doubt, when we're unsure, Jesus always says, come. He always says, come. He wants every person who doubts or questions who he is to come to him. Every person. The Holy Spirit is literally speaking to hearts all across this globe today. Come to Jesus. Right? Come to Jesus. He died for you. He wants you to live, to know him, to be with him. And Peter hears this and he goes. He walks out on this water to head out to Jesus. And then Peter sees the wind. That's that wind again, right? That tossing wind. It's very violent. It's torturous. He sees this wind and he thinks, I remember what you did to me last time, wind, before Jesus came out here. That was scary. Immediately. That wind was strong. Immediately. Filled with fear. He's filled with fear again. And here's the thing is when our mind wanders down that road, what happens to Peter happens to us. We start to sink. It's like, oh man, here we go again, right? I remember the last time this came into my life. I remember how terrible it was. I remember it was torturous. I remember it was like I couldn't get anywhere. I couldn't move ahead. It just kept holding me back no matter how hard I fought, no matter how hard I went. I couldn't get anywhere. It was terrible. And guess what? It's back. Now what am I supposed to do? When we got our mind and our focus on that, we begin to sink, just like Peter. But if we learn anything today, we need to learn this right here. Again, verse 31. Immediately, say immediately. This is how quick, after we come to that fear and we say, Lord, save me, this is how quick. It says, immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, O you of little faith, why do you doubt? Peter cried, Lord, save me, and Jesus did. When we start to sink, even if it's our own fault, even if we're sinking because of what we have said, what we have done, what we have believed, even if it's our own fault, when we cry out to Jesus, he stretches out his hand and he catches us. It's Jesus that keeps us from sinking. Right? It's not just a supernatural power to be able to walk on the water for a moment, right? Because Peter had that. He had that supernatural power to be able to walk on the water for a moment. And then fear set in, and he began to sink, and Jesus said, I'm here to save you every time. Every single time that you are in fear and you call to me, I will reach out my hand and I will pull you back to me. And as we see this play out here, think of this verse in Job chapter 9, verse 8. It says, "He alone spreads out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea." This is speaking of Jesus. It's he alone that spreads out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea, even when we have little faith. You know when he said that to Peter, "Oh, you of little faith? You of little faith." Let me tell you what that means. That means that our faith, it lacks confidence, it lacks trust, but it means that we have too little. It means that it's underdeveloped faith. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're not even tapping into what we have. It means that what we have is not mature. What we have is not quite yet where it ought to be. It's less than what it should be. But here's what he does is he stretches out his hand and he grabs a hold and he says, "I've got you." Sometimes we need to believe that in the midst of the storm is that, you know what? Man, sometimes I'm not sure if I've got Jesus. Right? Because I can be so lost. I can be so confused. I can be so filled with fear and so consumed with myself that I sometimes am not sure that I've got Jesus. But I tell you what, when you cry out, he says, "You may not be sure if you've got me, but I'm sure that I've got you." And he extends that hand and he pulls us near to him. Now listen, in verse 32 it says, "When they got into the boat, the wind ceased." When they got into the boat, the wind ceased. See, the wind doesn't necessarily cease just whenever Jesus grabs a hold of your hand and he says, "I've got you." The wind may still be whipping. The sea may still be roaring. It may be tossing you to and fro. And so this story here is often about Peter and how he steps out of the boat and about faith and about look what Peter did when he believed and kept his focus on Jesus. But I think it's a bigger deal here about what Jesus did, because it's when Jesus got in the boat is when the wind stopped whipping. It's when Jesus got in the boat that the fear was completely gone. It had stopped. See, the storm doesn't stop when you come around Jesus. But what happens is when he takes your hand, it keeps you from sinking. And when he takes your hand, he leads you to a place of safety. And then he stays there with you. And like all that were in the boat, what does it say? You are truly the Son of God. We have recognized that you are truly the Son of God. Why? Because he reached out and he took Peter's hand and he said, "I've got you. I've got you. I came for this." And so this morning, maybe that's you in this place. Maybe you've had a rough sea. Maybe you've had a rough life. Maybe you just have a rough week or morning. I'm telling you that when we call out to Jesus, what he does is he extends his hand and he grabs a hold of us and he says, "I've got you. I've got you. Now come with me. Follow me to the boat." No matter if your faith is little or if it's great, it doesn't change who he is. He is the Son of God. Jesus is Lord of all. Jesus is the one who was sent to save. Listen, he's the one who comes to our rescue. It's him and him alone. He's the one that brings peace to a restless heart. If you would stand to your feet. And as we close today, if we reflect on this passage and we reflect on what Jesus has done here, that this isn't just an amazing story of a miracle that he performed, but it's a revelation of his heart towards us, right? It shows us that the way he is with Peter and the way that he loved and saved Peter in spite of Peter's insecurities and his failures and his fear, that's an example of what Jesus extends and offers to every single one. every single one who would cry out, Lord, save me. If you would bow your heads and close your eyes, what does your heart say today? It's a question that only you can answer. But what does your heart today say today? Does it say what the disciples said in that day, that truly Jesus is the Son of God? You know what? If you're not in a storm this morning, that might be very easy to say. But if you're in the storm, can you still say it? Jesus is the Son of God. What about in the calm after the storm? Can you still say Jesus is the Son of God? This morning, if you need that hand to stretch out to you and to rescue you, I'm just going to ask that you simply come forward and ask him for that. As we open up the altars, we do this not to single people out, not to make you uncomfortable, but sometimes it's a stepping out. See, when Peter got out of the boat, he took some steps toward Jesus. And you know what? He was filled with fear, but he made the effort. He took the steps, and then Jesus said, you know what? I've got you. I've got you the rest of the way. Don't worry about a thing. You cry out to me, and I've got you today. So if you need that hand extended to you this morning, if you're struggling with fear, if you're struggling through the rough seas of life, come forward and let Jesus stretch his hand out to you. Father, we thank you and praise you for your word. We thank you for these stories, and God, that as we study them and we break them down, Lord, that you show us ultimately the heart of God in each and every story, because the heart of God is the man whose name is Jesus, who came to save, who came to stretch out his hand and say, I am for you. And if I'm for you, who can be against you? The one who stretches out his hand and says, I have been there and done that. You can take good cheer because I have overcome the world, and therefore I can overcome any situation that you're in. I've already done it, and you can have victory in me. And he can say to the sea, peace, be still. He can say to those waves to stop. Just his very presence when he gets into the boat can calm all of the wind that was so torturous for hour upon hour upon hour. And so I pray this morning that each and every person here would cry out and say, Lord, I need you, and would receive that extended hand, that they could be rescued and pulled into safety. We thank you for that. We praise you today in Jesus' name. Let's worship him.